Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. Today, we have no guest, but lots of commentaries. I'm going to share a commentary that I've wanted to share for a long time that I believe it's important that we finally pay attention to. I'll then open my lines for your feedback. I'll tell you about that a little later when we get to it. Today, we're going to start, of course, as we always do, with the latest on health and healing. Meditation can help with migraines. Inflammation is the connection between diabetes and heart disease. Also, there is a fruit out there that I've grown, never knew its medicinal value. It's called sapota, and it's a wonderful fruit. It turns kind of like a brown, has a little cinnamon flavor to it. The animals love it, and I make smoothies with it. Well, they tested it and found out it had tremendous healing power. Nice, because you can grow it through an awful lot of the United States. So I'll share that with you, and a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at some things that we don't spend a lot of time with in our society. We'd like to think that we're exceptional, and in some ways we have been and are, but in other ways we're not. And I'm going to share from David Swanson from Washington Blog, looking at wars from World War II till today. How many have we started? How many people have we killed or caused to die because of them? Really staggering statistics. Also something I mentioned over 2 years ago, I said if you live in California, unless you're in a very exclusive area, what I call green zones that will only increase in value, everyone else is going to see a hit for multiple reasons. One, because of the continuing ghettoization of the urban environment, what I call the urban ghettos of America, not the and suburban ghettos of America, I should say, not just the urban ghettos, and also the loss of water. Because when you no longer have water, you realize your environment's no longer sustainable. So people will begin to move. That causes property values to plummet. And I figure there'll be anywhere from a 5 to a 30% drop in the next 2 years in the value of California real estate. Well, right now there is a new report out today from Wolf Ricker. California home sales dive, prices hit wall, millennials blamed. We'll take a look at that. Life on $2 a day, we'll take a look at that. Plus, I'm going to have two presentations today. One is in response to why all 100 of our U.S. senators, including Bernie Sanders, who really loves the military-industrial complex, he is certainly on the right side of issues on many issues, but not when it comes to how much money the Pentagon gets and what it spends money on. He is absolutely a super financial hawking for the Pentagon. But also Elizabeth Warren, she's just maybe a little more presentable person than Hillary Clinton, still a corporate Democrat. But not one could find a reason to challenge Israel's incursion into Gaza. Well, there is a senator who did speak out on it, but you haven't heard him. You will. He's an Irish senator. Hear the difference between how we kowtow to the APEC and the American Jewish lobby and all the influence it has, which is tremendous. It actually has more power over our legislators than the National Rifle Association and the Pharmaceutical Association. And then you listen to someone who quite simply can't be brought down to the level of being a voice for a particular group. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Wake Forest Medical Center did a study and found that we're very stressed. Well, we know that. Quote, stress is a well-known trigger for headaches, and research supports the general benefits of mind-body interventions for migraines. But there hasn't been much research to evaluate specific standardized meditation interventions. So a Dr. Rebecca Wells, medical doctor and professor of neurology at Wake Forest, wrote an article, did research, published in the peer-reviewed journal Headache. It shows that meditation can mitigate migraine headache misery. Took a group of adults who all were suffering from migraines and taught them how to meditate. Didn't take long. It was just mindfulness. Just focusing on the simple things, controlling your breathing, relaxing, and made an enormous difference. So that is good. Now just imagine in a day how little time we give ourselves to actually meditate, to go to a green space. Doesn't have to be out of the city. It can be, if you're living in New York City, it could be Central Park or Riverside Park, Cortlandt Park, a beautiful place, Prospect Park, Queens Botanical Gardens, Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, Bronx Botanical Gardens. We have all these wonderful green spaces, great for meditating. For years, I've been growing and trying to improve or enhance different species of fruits. I created a unique cherry. I call it the ambrosia cherry. And anyone that's ever been down to my ranch and knows when they taste it, it's just delicious. Because of all the pollination in the bees, because of re-enriching the soil with sea emulsion that I collect in the morning when the tide goes out, the seaweed's left behind. You just take a rake, you rake it into big giant bags, you take it back, you dry those bags out on a compost, rich soil, but a different type of soil because it has the sea minerals in it. Then you put that, you shovel it gently, like with a rake, into the base of a tree. Never near the root system and the trunk of the tree, never fertilize there. You always fertilize. Now listen to what I'm saying. You always fertilize at the drip line. Most people don't know that. As a result, when they do fertilize, the fertilizer is too close to the tree and away from the roots. Just visualize when a tree is growing. First, it starts off as a root ball, but over a period of time, the root ball starts to untangle itself and the little tiny roots start seeking nourishment. And so they start to go out and down. So within a few years, your little, let's say your 2-foot root ball is now 10 feet away from the tree. So if you fertilize too close, you're going to miss it altogether. That fertilizer will be worth nothing. That's like turning the shower on with your hand inside the shower, but you standing outside the shower by the toilet. And then after 15 minutes, you think, well, that was a good shower. No, you didn't get any water on your body. You had to step in the shower and get under the water. Same thing with fertilizing. You have to fertile at the drip line. The drip line means where water comes off the end leaf or end branch and drops to the ground. That's where you fertilize. Generally in a 1-foot wide swath. In any case, that's where I fertilize. And then the trees grow and suddenly, lo and behold, you're seeing three different fruit-bearing harvests per season. Now, that's under normal conditions, but because of global warming, I'm seeing loquat flowering in July. It's supposed to flower in March. Whether or not it flowers again in March, it'll be interesting to see. But one of the trees is called the sapota, S-A-P-O-T-A. And you also have to remember, cut your trees back at the end of the season when they're green but have not yet developed a lot of fruit. And you do this by taking a saw and cutting the top of the tree so you can always reach it. Otherwise, the tree will go up, the energy goes in the height of the tree, and as a result, you frequently don't get a lot of fruit. If you want the most amount of fruit, the most nutritious fruit, then you have to keep the tree closer to the ground. If you've ever gone into orange groves in Florida, and there's a gazillion of them, and California, you'll see that the orange and grapefruit trees, lemon and lime trees are not high. Because if you get too high, you can't get the fruit. But also, it's more than just not getting access to the fruit. the energy goes and the nutrients go to the highest point. Cut it, so I like to keep them about 8 foot. Anyhow, then it grows out in width, and hence you get far more fruit. If you ever go up on my website and go to picture Gary's photo gallery, then go to the Florida homestead, you'll see these fruit trees and see how many fruit are on a tree. Generally about 2 to 3 times what you'd find on a normal tree. But one of these is the sapota. And it originally came from Central America, the rainforest, also up into Mexico and Belize. And now it's everywhere. You can find it from Sri Lanka to Indonesia and Malaysia. It's very fast growing. It's very resistant to drought. And hence, it's suitable for dry areas that don't get a lot of rain. So if you're out in, let's say, all New Mexico, and lower parts of California, most of Texas, Nevada, you can grow it. It's a brown color, and it has a gets about the size of an orange, or a little smaller. And the flesh, when it's ripe, is soft. You can push it and it goes in, it squeezes. And it turns brown, very delicious. So that's the fruit. Now we know that it's rich in fiber. And in fact, in just a 3-ounce portion, it'll give you almost 6 grams of fiber. It's low in calories. But evidently, it's rich in what are called saponins. And these saponins and these terpenoids are extremely beneficial to turn off inflammation, kill bacteria, act as an analgesic, and there's polyphenols, and there's dihydromercetin, quercetin, catechin, epicatechin, gallocatechin, gallic acid. All of these are healing. Now, there's a lot of science on this now. And here's why this is one fruit you should grow or you should eat. It has tremendous health benefits. It's good for diabetics. If you suffer from aches and pains and inflammation, it can help turn it off. It's anti-inflammatory. It's super rich in antioxidants. That means it's good to use to prevent cancer, and if you have cancer, that's why I say you can make a smoothie of this. It's good for your bones. The body needs iron, phosphorus, and calcium, which the sapota has in abundance, plus minerals. It's rich, rich, rich in fiber, and it's good for your digestive system. Helps prevent constipation. Pregnant women find a lot of help having sapota because the high amounts of nutrients, and lactating mothers especially face weakness, and which is why sapota is given to them. And blood loss can be an issue, and one needs to stop it. Thanks to the sapota, this can be done because of its ability to help that, and it's antibacterial and antiviral, so that's also good. So that's that. Now, we have known for a long time that if you have diabetes, you're more susceptible to heart disease. Now we know the connection. This is from the American Heart Association. And here's the latest study. Quote, inflammation may be the reason high blood sugars levels, that's diabetes, damage blood vessels, raising the possibility that anti-inflammatory medications might someday be used to lower the risk of blood vessel disease in people with diabetes. Let's stop there for a moment. Hello, American Heart Association. With all your money and all your power, why don't you even have someone on your staff who knows even basic science? You're asking, wouldn't it be great if we had such a thing in the future? We have had it for a long time. What you're talking about is healing and preventing further damage to the epithelial lining of the arteries and heart. And the veins. Because when you start having scratches and lesions and deformities of the epithelium, you can clog the arteries, leading to heart disease. Well, pomegranate has long been shown to help heal the epithelium. In fact, I know of no fruit except the grape, the mighty grape with its grape skin extract, its grape seed extract, its proanthocyanidins, and its resveratrol that can do the same. So if you happen to eat grapes and also pomegranates, you're doing a tremendous amount of good. So please get up. All of these major institutions just seem to be clueless about anything. They're always following. They've never led on anything when it comes to understanding natural healing. So this is what they're suggesting. Okay, now what they found is there is association between elevated glucose, meaning elevated blood sugar, and the damage to the epithelium and the inflammation that that elevated blood sugar causes. And then that leads to heart disease. All right, good. That part is correct. But keep in mind, why don't you do a campaign and put it on television as a public service announcement that shows the average meal, a bun, a bagel, toast, a roll, and how a piece of bread, every time you consume that, you're raising blood sugar levels, and that causes inflammation. Then why don't you do another ad showing that how we eat food in its prepared form contributes to either an anti- or pro-inflammatory effect upon the arteries. Hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, french fries, meat that's grilled, barbecued, the buffalo wings, all of those are pro-inflammatory. Whereas legumes and pulses and beans, nuts and seeds and sprouts and sprouted nut butters, those are anti-inflammatory. Why not show one that creates a pH imbalance towards acidity when people have alcohol and then eat meat with arachidonic acid? That means you're acidic. Whereas if you eat grains and nuts and seeds and juices, you're alkaline. And then from that acidity comes damage to the lining of the arteries. I think that would be a great service to society. We would all benefit from that. And finally, yogic breathing shows promise in reducing symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, my Veterans Village, by the way, is complete. And starting in the new year, I will be working on a daily basis with a group of vets, and I'm filming the whole thing. I'll be working with anywhere from 12 to 20 vets who have post-traumatic stress disorder, who have Gulf War syndrome, who are smoking, drinking, drugs, can't get work, lost their families. And my goal is to be able to show, and it's free to the vets, my goal is to show that after a period of time, and we don't know how long that time is, but I'm going to say between 3 months to 6 months, that these people can be completely healed so that they can regain the relationship with their family. They can be employable. They will not be in any of the addictive states of mind or body, and the damage of post-traumatic stress disorder and Gulf War syndrome will be overcome. So it'll be an interesting challenge. At the completion of it, I will do a public presentation with the vets and their families and show what we have done. And we will have medical, psychological evaluations throughout it because I have board-certified psychologists, medical doctors who'll be helping as well. If this works, which I believe it will, because I've done this with individuals, then this should be a model that can be duplicated around the world in different places. But we're going to get underway shortly. In any case, one of the techniques that I've found very beneficial for anyone suffering from stress, including post-traumatic stress disorder, is yogic breathing. And this is a study from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. I'll quote it. One of the greatest casualties of war is its lasting effect on the minds of soldiers. This presents a daunting public health problem. More than 20% of veterans returning from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have post-traumatic stress disorder. That's according to the RAND Corporation. A new study from the Center for Investigating Health Minds at the Weizmann Center at the University of Wisconsin offers hope for those suffering from the disorder. Researchers there have shown that breathing-based meditation practices can be an effective treatment for post-traumatic stress disorders. Individuals with post-traumatic stress suffer from intrusive memories, heightened anxiety, and personality changes. The hallmark of the disorder is hypoarousal, which can be defined as overreacting to innocuous stimuli and is often described as feeling jumpy or easily startled or constantly on guard. And hypoarousal is one aspect of the autonomic nervous system, the system that controls the beating of the heart and other body functions and governs one's ability to respond to their environment. So they gave these individuals this type of cryo yoga with breathing, and it made a tremendous difference. So that's good. So for those of you who have the disorder or know someone who does, now you have one more way of trying to help them. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now I want to share a commentary. I voted for Ralph Nader. I never bring people on this radio program because I'm going to vote for him. The only people I've ever brought on are people who would qualify as independent and progressive in their platforms. And more than anything, I want the platform to be the emphasis. If we begin to put before the public what the real issues are, what the solutions are, and how if we stick with a corporate Democrat Republican left-right charade, we will never get a single progressive platform on. And if there is ever one that is, it's almost always where the mainstream has compromised someone in order to get one of that person's platforms initiated into their platform, but later that is always dropped and they go the other direction now that they have the person's endorsement or support. Here's what reason minds should have understood. Always look at the likely outcome of the choices you're making. Now, this is true of everything in life, but there seems to be this black hole in the ideologies that we live by that we never look far enough to see the likely outcome. Like we're not looking right now at where does ISIS come from. Well, anyone who does homework knows that ISIS was created by what we did. We funded the so-called moderates in Afghanistan to fight the Russians. They were the Mujahideen. Then we funded the moderates in Libya, and they became ISIS, and they were controlled by Al-Qaeda. And now we've been funding moderates in Jordan, Turkey, and Syria, and they are ISIS. So it doesn't matter whether one cuts off your head as a show of their power, or one takes 250 soldiers into the desert in their underwear and just shoots them, the outcome is still the same. They will say that they're doing something in the name of their religion. It has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with their politics, control, and power, and then the propaganda. So we create a perpetual war that drains us, kills Americans and other people around the world, and no one looks at, was this likely to happen? The answer is yes. It was inevitable. There's a little story I'll tell you. Near the end of the Vietnam War, at least after the 1973 accords were signed in Paris, where the fighting stopped on both sides, which it did, then the Americans withdrew all the troops, which they did. But they left behind about 7,000, more or less, advisors and people to run the embassy, which was one of the largest embassies out in the world that we had. But also we were, our CIA and all of our naval and special force operations were still working with the Vietnamese military and a lot of business people. That's what we left behind. But we happened to have put an ambassador in place there whose own son had been killed in the Vietnam War, and he was a super hawk patriot. And so he he saw that we had to stay there virtually forever until there was a just peace where there, the North and the South were two completely separate entities. So when all the troops left, Ho Chi Minh gave the command, and they marched down. And because there were no Americans there, it was easy for them to take over all of the other bases. Da Nang fell quickly. So when it was clear, with months to go, that South Vietnam would be overrun, all the advisors are telling this person, the ambassador, we have to leave. We have to get the people. It's easy for us to get the Americans who work here out. That's easy. But what about the 150,000 Vietnamese who've been working with us in our intelligence agencies, translators, interrogators at every level, and their families? That's 500,000 people. We have a 500,000 people we have to get out of here because they'll be killed as collaborating with the enemy. Nothing. He didn't want to acknowledge this. He didn't want to look ahead. And he kept this up until just a week before. So when literally the Saigon was being surrounded and the airport closed down and the ocean, the rivers closed down, then and only then did he put into motion that we have to do something. But by then, all they could do is helicopters. And so they got about 75,000 total people by boats out and by helicopters out. But that meant that an awful lot, about 375,000 people that worked for the United States, were left behind. And many were killed. Others were sent to rehabilitation camps for years or longer, like decades. In any case, it was just an example of what happens when you're in a conflict and you don't look ahead. You don't look at the unintended and as well as intended consequences. So they should have taken a look carefully at the background of the candidates that were running and said, what has this person done in their life politically? And what is the likely outcome that they would have the strength to go forward honoring all of the citizens of the United States, not just the corporate interest? That wasn't done. Hence the following. If Ralph Nader had won the 1996 presidential campaign against Bill Clinton, Dole and Ross Perot, there would never have been NAFTA and GATT, trade deals that took jobs, 1.3 million jobs away from the United States, caused Mexico 2 million jobs, mainly farming, and started the dissemination of U.S. manufacturing. That is when we began to offshore at a rapid level American jobs and factories. That's when the equity partnerships, that's when the venture capitalists came in, would buy a factory, move its operations to China or India or Bangladesh, and then fire all the people. It was fully supported by the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton, and by the majority of people in Congress. That wouldn't have happened. Today, we have lost over 30 million jobs because of companies being bought and outsourced, downsized, or changed, merely for the profit of those in power. Ralph Nader would not have allowed that to happen. GATT, he would have allowed. Without GATT, there would have been no founding of the World Trade Organization, a completely criminal organization that has enabled developing nations to capitalize on raping poor nations and protecting corporate interests against consumer protection throughout the world. Worker wages would have increased in part because unions would have been strengthened. Instead, with GATT and the World Trade Organization, workers' wages decreased and unions were eviscerated. Isn't it ironic that on the left, the arrogance, the unbridled, you can almost not talk with them, they're so arrogant. They claim they're pro-union, and yet virtually everything they've done has been to destroy the unions. And yet they will proudly say we're union. Well, since when? Do a little homework. The Glass-Steagall Act would not have been repealed which ultimately led to the 2008 financial collapse and will contribute to the future bursting of bubbles still on the horizon. Citizens' savings and savings and loan banks, including home mortgages, would be safe today and not victim to crazed speculative bankers, hedge funds, and financial cowboys and bandits. The Commodity Future Modernization Act, which legalized over-the-counter derivatives, which are viewed purely as weapons of economic destruction, would not have been authorized. Today, we have over $100 trillion just in the United States. And we, the American consumer, are on the hook for 90% of the payback if they go bad. We don't get a penny of the rewards. We pay 90% of the loss. Having reined in Wall Street and big banks, there would have been no need for Occupy Wall Street. A Nader administration would have already occupied it. You wouldn't have had the Glass-Steagall Act, which FDR put in place to keep the casino banks that are speculators and selfish and from the savings loan banks. The doctrine of sustainable equivalence that has become the leading superstition to approve genetically modified foods would have been forced into a strict scientific review and likely repealed as scientifically unsound and false. Hence, you would have had no GMO foods today. And hence, no need for March Against Monsanto or Me to Do Seeds of Death, the documentary. Nader would not have reneged on America's early promise between Daddy Bush and Gorbachev. NATO would not advance to Russia's borders, as is happening today. The U.S. would not meddle in Russia's internal affairs. The heightened tensions now between the U.S. and Russia fall on Clinton's shoulders and his hubris of American exceptionalism and corporate economic colonialism, which he was a major participant in, as was his wife. And since Nader would not side with NATO expansionism, there would be no fascist government in Ukraine today. Also, Clinton was complicit in not stopping genocide. Nader would have done everything possible to stop it, including, by the way, as we all know, anyone who's actually studied, as I have meticulously studied with great scholarship, everything about Rwanda, you will find that one person, and that is the former head military from the United Nations, a Canadian, was there, and he knew where the weapons were that were going to be used. He communicated with the UN that he was going to go in and destroy the whole cache of weapons. He was told to stand down. When they were going to take hostages, he had gotten a tip on it, and he knew he could get the hostages out of harm's way, the Belgians. He was told to stand down. They killed all 10 of those hostages. And that's what caused all the other nations to remove their troops. When the 2,400 plus church members were hiding in a church and the last of the Belgian forces and Italian forces left, he said he was going to go in there and replace them to prevent their slaughter. He was told to stand down. So he and his soldiers had to watch 2,500 Tutsis being chopped to pieces. And the horrors go on. Multiple times he could have stopped the genocide. Every single time, because of the Clinton White House and State Department and the UN, he was told to stand down. Little part of history. Ralph Nader would never have stood down. Rwanda would have stopped. Also, I believe that Nader would have dealt with Bosnia differently through diplomacy and sanctions before use of military action. Also, he would have vetoed the Defense of Marriage Act that prevented the LGBT community from marriage. Clinton signed a blow against the LGBT rights movement. Much greater progress in solving the two-state crisis between Israel and Palestine would have commenced, and Nader would likely have reduced the influence of the pro-Israeli lobby from Washington. Of course, Israel would probably have wanted him assassinated. There would be no green revolution spearheaded by Monsanto to industrialize American agriculture. Rather than giving a green light to chemical companies to poison soil and crops with ever more toxic chemicals, greater regulation of pesticide safety would be implemented. Although the Clinton administration is credited with the U.S. longest economic expansion, the highest rate of home ownership, lowest unemployment rate in 30 years, and the smallest welfare rolls in 35 years, lowest poverty rates and highest incomes, Nader would have improved on this far more by lessening the income inequality gap. These figures would reflect more the economic improvements of the average citizen rather than the privileged elite that Clinton kowtowed to. Nuclear power plants would be completely decommissioned. We wouldn't have a single nuclear power plant in the United States. He would have closed them all. Clinton wanted to expand them because Clinton, Ron Emanuel, and Clinton's contacts, I should say it was Obama's Ron Emanuel, but Clinton was connected directly to the largest manufacturers of nuclear power in the United States. Private funding of elections would be banned, which would have prevented the electoral debacles in the succeeding elections and the influence of corporate fascists such as the Koch brothers and also George Soros. Federal funds for public media and broadcasting would be strictly for public interest and not the interest of private corporations, especially the pathetic PBS, NPR, and they would be completely reformed to serve the needs for which they were originally founded. All the federal health agencies, the Health and Human Services, CDC, and FDA, would be reconstructed to break the widespread conflicts of interest with private medical industries and big pharma to assure that only the safest drugs, medical devices, diagnostics, and cheaper prices are approved to best serve America's health. The two-party duopoly dictating all policy in this nation would have been broken, and the U.S. would have moved to a greater democratic representation with the inclusion of third parties into the legislative process. There'd be strict bans on the privatization of any resources upon which human life depends. If Nader had won the 2000 presidential campaign against Bush and Gore, it would have been also different. If people believed the argument that the U.S. government was behind 9/11, then certainly there would have been a complete review, and there would have been no 9/11 if the government was behind it, and that is merely speculative, if Nader were president. If people believe the official commission report that al-Qaeda affiliated Muslim terrorists hijacked airplanes and crashed them into the buildings, then although there would have been direct military action against al-Qaeda cells and attempts to capture bin Laden, there would not have been an aggressive militarization regime change in Afghanistan. Yes, destabilization of the Taliban rulership, but no to turning Afghanistan into a puppet vassal of the U.S. There would have been no invasion of the Iraq area to oust Saddam Hussein, which has cost us $3 trillion and will go as high as $5 trillion. There would have been no ISIS in Iraq today. There would have been no civil unrest between Sunni and Shia, since there would not have been a declared war on terrorism. There would not have been a Patriot Act, a Homeland Security Department, no National Defense Authorization Act, no need for a massive and insane private intelligence surveillance program, nor a private military-industrial complex that has taken over U.S.'s foreign policy. A large reduction in the Department of Defense budget by scrapping useless military projects, reducing forces and bases overseas, and reform the military into a defensive rather than offensive force. We would not have assassinations of American or any other citizens without due process. We would have our complete constitutional rights intact. You would have all of your amendments held sacred, having aggressively sought a peace resolution between Israel and Palestine and restricting Israel lobbying in the halls of Washington. There would be no justification for Gazans to elect Hamas. Hence, you would not have Hamas in power. There would not have been a government-subsidized hydrofracking boom, nor indiscriminate subsidies to other fossil fuel industries. There would have been no such thing as clean coal or clean nuclear power. Government energy investments would parallel that of other developed nations, such as Germany and Sweden, that are rapidly moving to alternative, clean, renewable, non-fossil fuel energy sources. Rather than following the Bush agenda of rapid deregulation of private industries, Nader would further regulating industries in order to protect consumers from dangerous products, environmental and human health toxic chemicals, and slapping higher fines and imprisonment of corporate executives who intentionally fraud American citizens with hazardous products. Rather than opening public lands to corporate interests, deforestation and mining, greater efforts would be made to protect U.S. wilderness and ecological habitats and even expand them with reforestation programs. Student loans would still be included in the bankruptcy laws rather than now contributing to our current epidemic of student debt slavery. Rather than favor Wall Street and the large multinational corporate regime, Nader would be putting more resources and policies that benefit small businesses. No federal preference would be given to private charter schools. Bill Gates' educational reforms would have been put in the trash can where they belong, and greater investments would have been made to improve America's public education. Corporate media would be held accountable for deceiving the American public with lies to support their private and political interests. The private prison system would be slowly disbanded or would become so highly regulated and accountable for its actions and predatory pricing on taxpayers that it would no longer be a lucrative industry. Prisons would return to the more cost-effective model of direct public funding, which worked better for decades, and you would have had no more people going to jail because of drugs. Drugs would have been legalized, I believe. Nader, had he won the 2008 presidential election against Barack Obama and John McCain, there would be no Obamacare health program written by the private insurance industry. There would be universal single-payer health care as an expansion of Medicare, which is already socialized medicine. A Supreme Court decision favoring Citizens United ruling corporations have the rights of citizens would have been overruled. Bankers who defrauded the American public that contributed to the global financial crisis would be behind bars. The Glass-Steagall Act would be immediately reinstated, and the Federal Reserve would have been prevented from providing no-interest loans to banks and corporations. Higher taxes on corporations, closing all tax loopholes, penalties on offshore accounts to generate higher revenues in the federal system to strengthen American domestic infrastructure, social programs, education, and health care. Ralph Nader would have declared a moratorium on home foreclosures and reformed the predatory lending practices to keep people in their homes. The Federal Reserve would have been immediately audited following the meltdown. Every federal bureaucracy would also be audited and held accountable for its waste of public monies. There would have been an immediate withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan and Iraq. There would be no invasion of Libya or Syria. The Arab Spring would have evolved on its own volition without U.S. intervention and regime change. The State Department would be a vehicle for statesmanship to develop win-win relationships between nations rather than to expand U.S. economic and military domination. Foreign policy would reflect the best values of the U.S. rather than the corporate interest of Monsanto, U.S. oil companies, and commodity and speculative traders. Ralph Nader would have kept Obama's false promise to keep America's food safe and truly organic. Now, that is what I believe, but from all that I know of this man, that's what he would have represented. Here's what Ralph Nader actually did. This is his actual record. Without being a politician, without holding a political office, he was able to achieve what no human being in American history has achieved, not even Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, or Abraham Lincoln. Here's what he achieved. This is actual legislation. National Automobile and Highway Traffic Safety Act, Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Co-op Bank Bill, Law Establishing the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, Consumer Product Safety Act, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the Mine Health and Safety Act to help coal miners, the Whistleblowers Protection Act, Medical Devices Safety Act, the Nuclear Power Safety Act, the Mobile Home Security Act, Consumer Credit Disclosure Law, the Pension Protection Law, the Funeral Home Cost Disclosure Law, the Tire Safety and Grading Disclosure Law, the Wholesome Meat Act, the Natural Gas Pipeline Safety Act, the Federal Coal Mine Health and Safety Act, the Wholesome Poultry Product Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, the OSHA, Safe Water Drinking Act, the Freedom of Information Act, the National Traffic and Motor Safety Act. Here, and that's just some. And here are some of the organizations that Ralph Nader either founded or co-founded. The American Antitrust Institute, the Appleseed Foundation, the Arizona Center for Law and the Public Interest, the Aviation Consumer Action Project, Buyers Up, Capitol Hill's New Service Center for Concerned Engineering, Center for Auto Safety, the Center for Insurance Research, the Center for Justice and Democracy, the Center for Justice and the Public Interest, the Center for Study of Responsible Law, the Center for Women Policy Studies, Citizens Action Group, Citizens Advocacy Center, Citizens United Utility Board, Citizens Work, the Clean Water Action Project, Clearinghouse for Professional Responsibility, Congress Project, Congress Watch, Congress Accountability Project, the Connecticut Citizen Action Group, Consumer Protection on Technology, Corporate Accountability Research Group, the Critical Mass Energy Project, Democracy Rising, Disability Rights Center, Equal Justice Foundation, Essential Information, Fight to Advance the Nation's Sports, Fishermen's Clear Water Action Group, the Foundation for Taxpayers and Consumer Rights, the Freedom of Information Clearinghouse, Global Trade Watch, Government Purchasing Project, Health Research Group, Litigation Group, Multinational Monitor, National Citizens Coalition for Nursing Home Reform, the National Coalition for Universities in the Public Interest, the National Insurance Consumer Organization, the Ohio Public Interest Action Group, Organizations for Competitive Markets, Professional Drivers, Professionals for Auto Safety, Public Citizen, and then Pension Rights Center, the Princeton Project 55, the Prod Truck Safety, Public Citizens Vision Centers, Public Interest Research Groups, the Research Consumption Alliance, Retired Professionals Action Group, Tax Reform Research, and Telecommunications Research Center, plus he co-authored 25 books. No one in American history has ever even come close to doing what he has done in the public interest. Every day of his life that I'm aware of, when he was on point, you could not compromise him, you could not corrupt him, you could not get away with lying to him. He was there for us. If ever we needed someone who is the spirit and the voice of the American public, it was Ralph Nader. Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from a woman who didn't leave her name, but she said, I didn't attend your medical conference last week in Los Angeles in person, but I did attend it over the internet. She said, I would not have wanted to be the speaker that follows you. She says, like the ones that preceded you for 3 days, they were mostly dry, factual, and boring, though somewhat informative. She said, the reason I'm emailing you is this. I saw you with one of the speakers on Sunday, Bob Mackey, the owner and founder of Whole Foods. My brother's small health food store closed 2 months after his Whole Foods opened up about a mile away. So he says, first, what would he be doing at this kind of a conference? And second, knowing your feelings about Whole Foods, did you really have a chance to speak with him? And if so, what was the outcome?
No, I did not speak with Mackey. I had left before he gave his presentation. I gave my presentation, went and left. But I did bring to the director of the whole event's attention, I asked, why is this man on the podium? I'm not aware of anything that he has done that has enhanced the public well-being. And I gave an example. I said, every time he opens up one of his health food stores, and I challenge that they are health food stores, that all the small stores go broke. And I don't know anyone in the United States who's caused more small health food stores to go broke and their employees to go out of business and no jobs than this one man. Also, I gave examples of how often he's been cited or found responsible for mislabeling when he labeled organic, and it wasn't. It was made in China. His support of GMOs. He's an Ayn Rand libertarian. Not my favorite person, all right? But he also sponsored some clinics that were attended by them. Okay? So
okay.
I have no respect for that man. Let's say hello to Reese from New York. Reese, your turn.
Yeah, good afternoon, Gary. I've listened to you for quite a number of years now. And your commentary, I couldn't have done it any better as far as Ralph Nader. That was the answer for this country. If people really were awake, enlightened, human beings, informed, following the spirit, the genuine spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King, we would have rallied behind this man. And I can't add to what you said. I mean, you know, it's just amazing. But here is the appallingly, depressing state of affairs that we're in right now. And here's what it is. I speak to a lot of people in New York City on the street, and here's what it is. Coming from rich, poor, ghetto people, I talk to them all. If Obama was running tomorrow, 98% or 90% of blacks would vote for him and probably 70% of whites. People are not thinking. They're simply responding to programs, you know, responses from their television. They're not thinking and reasoning and saying, we need to start choosing based on the great leader, Dr. Martin Luther King, who, honest to God, anyone with a mind knows he would have been chasing Obama down the street with a switch if he was alive today for what he's been doing, especially to his own people. But we need to be enlightened, and we've got to start thinking outside of that television.
Okay, Reese, we're coming up to the end of the show, but here's my response to you. We do have enlightened people. We have millions of enlightened Americans. In fact, 44% of all voters state that they are now independent, and a high percentage of them progressive, no longer Democratic and Republican. The trouble is they're not yet organized. I would like to see Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, Ralph Nader, Dennis Kucinich, all coming together, and others who have progressive ideals, bringing into their camp for platforms people such as Chris Hedges and other people, Michael Hudson, the great economist, Greg Palast. Do you realize what kind of government we could have? Do you realize what kind of take back the power to the people we could have? But we can't do it as long as we have smarly people who are on national television mocking people who have done nothing their whole lives except positiveness for their cause. They have never betrayed it. I'm going to support someone who's never betrayed their principles. And I don't see anyone in office right now that holds those. Thank you for your call. One last quick call. Nicole from New York, your turn. Nicole, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, it's a pleasure to be on. I have been an avid listener since I was 18. I am now 30. And I wanted to comment because I feel like I have a network of enlightened friends, and we're always analyzing exactly what you were just discussing and just thinking, I guess one of the first main steps is to take big money out of politics. I do think that we may be able to get like-minded individuals such as like Ralph Nader, people. There are people out there who I think it's at this point it is difficult for them to run on. I just think big money out of politics is what, if we can even get young adults such as myself, and if we can get that as maybe the next step, I think that's what can help change.
Nicole, you're absolutely on point. What I suggest you do is do what the woman who was behind March on Monsanto did. Start a small group and then write articles about it, essays about it, opinion pieces about it. Try to get it in your local papers and then get it on the internet, and then start getting alliances of people on one single issue so that you're no longer just a few voices without a forum. You become the forum. You take your message and then let other people that we can try to get to run for office come in and support you. That's how we build a coalition. We have the good people that represent the public. We have them now. They just don't have a coalition. We, the independents, need to work on their behalf of getting them into office. They will get the funding out of politics. We will insist upon it. That will be a platform. Remember, what your party's platform is what you're run on. We have to put, and I mentioned this in my commentary, Ralph Nader would have taken all money out of politics. I've had that conversation with him. That I know. So I thank you, Nicole, and start on your own and do it now. Okay? All the best to you. And we're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And by the way, my lectures tonight are packed. Sorry, there's no more room. But they're being filmed, so in time, you'll be able to see them, including Where's My Life, Dude? For all the people 35 and under, that one's going on tonight also. Have a nice day. Let's say hello to you, Therese Lee. Hi, you, Therese.
Hi, Gary. Today, President Obama's war on terror and international law.
Great. By the way, Thursday, I've got a show that is just going to knock everyone's socks off. I can't tell you what it's going to be, and I can't tell you who's on it, but I can promise you this, there won't be a single person in this audience, not one, that has ever heard the information I'm going to share with my guest on Thursday. Just mark that on your calendar. It'll be historic. Have a nice day, you Therese Lee, right now.